So to get us kicked off, the first question is probably just a natural one. What does an engaged network look like in practice? So in the day-to-day work of being at an organization where you have an engaged network and you're building that capacity to innovate, how does it actually look? So Mary, why don't you start us off in telling us a little bit about how that works at WinRock?
Okay, so what I'd like to do is tell you about how we use WOW visits, which you'll understand in a moment, as a means of engagement. In order to kind of set the context, let me tell you about the situation that we were in. We had a challenge in early 2009. WinRock began a new MUS water project in Morogoro, Tanzania. It was a new approach. We were using new technologies, and it was a new area that we were working in. In order to get things up and going, we needed to get buy-in and support from a very skeptical and diverse group of stakeholders, local government, communities, the private sector. And we needed to move really fast. We had some challenges in working in the consortium we were with, and we had significant delays in startup, and the pressure was on us to get people up and going. So we decided to use what we coined the WOW visits as a means to engage a skeptical and diverse group of actors that we needed to get involved. So here's what we did. We had another NGO that we were working with in a very remote area of Tanzania, down in the south in an area called Njombe. They were doing some of the work that we wanted to include in our project area. And so what we did is we got folks from local government, engineers, leaders, we got community members, and also the private sector. We wanted to work with some small ma-and-pa type operations. We put them all together on a bus, and we brought them down to Njombe for what we called the WOW visit. In the WOW visit, they were able to go out and look and see and feel, see what was happening on the ground, talk to their counterparts with local government, and ask the tough questions for themselves to see, hey, is this something that they were interested in? We worked collectively as a group, and then we also worked with them individually. We had the private sector people, people who we wanted to manufacture pumps for us, talk to pump makers in Njombe. We had local government people talk to local government people. We had community members talk to community members. What was so great about it is that almost all the participants came back interested and engaged and willing to go to work. It worked amazingly well. And the thing that was so great about it is that because they were able to touch and see and feel it, they themselves were able to talk to their counterpart once they got back home. So community members were able to talk to community members and local government, to private sector, and kind of share the news. So this is an example where we had a challenge and we need to get people engaged quickly, and how we sort of jump-started that whole process of engagement through the WOW visits. And as we talk a little bit more about some of these other questions, I'll refer back to this example and tell you how that network has continued to work for us.
Perfect. Great example of exactly how those networks are coming together on that day-to-day basis. And I think what's great is when you first hear that WOW visit, you assume you're bringing people from the outside and wowing them. But the reality is it's everybody's getting wowed, and it is down to the community members on the ground who are taking action. It's a great example. Mark, what about you? What's an example of how networks are activated and engaged on a daily basis in your organization?
We have a lot of networks that we use that are more the traditional networks that are partners, let's say, in the field. An example of establishing a new one was that about 4 years ago, we were focusing on improving our capacity to respond in humanitarian crises. And one of the tools that we knew that we really needed to use in these types of situations was the use of digital mapping. And our focus here was really to get information to the local population. The reason for that was that we were really focused on using local media to make sure that the local population was actually empowered to play a more active role in the humanitarian response and be much less of a recipient or a passive recipient of aid. In our organization, we really didn't have the resources or the expertise as well as the bandwidth to really focus on developing a better understanding on how to use these digital maps. And with the establishment of the International Crisis Mappers Network, we were able to attend their first gathering, introduce ourselves to a lot of technologists that were entering into this space. And then about 8 months later, during the Haitian earthquake, a lot of these people who had been, a lot of the developers who had actually been at this conference, were showing up in this humanitarian crisis, many for the first time. And because of our experience in the humanitarian area, especially humanitarian information, we were first both able to really kind of assist in interfacing that. But most importantly is that we were able to work with them on the tools that they had with regard to making sure those were connected to local media, so that the local radio stations were actually became a really a key link to the ability for people using these specific tools to improve humanitarian information, to make sure that that got out to the general population and they were more engaged. And then at the same time is also showing how through that medium we could actually make it much more interactive, that we could get much more input from the local population through call-in shows and other interactive programs. And then finally, at the next International Crisis Mappers Conference, once again, we were able to establish, because of what we had been able to establish with them and networking in the field, is to really reinforce within that community, as they were becoming increasingly influential in this space, is really to help stress the need or the critical need for, as information systems and networks were being put together during humanitarian crises, and as many of these tools were being developed to be used by or for the humanitarian organizations, was really to stress the importance that that information which is gathered, even if it is for humanitarian operations, is also rendered accessible to the local population, those in greatest need. And it really has had a kind of a multiplying effect as we've moved forward through emergency to emergency.
Perfect. Another great example. And it's interesting to see the comparison just between what Mary and Mark talked about. Mary really was describing pulling together a network, really weaving something together that had really immediate impact on an on-the-ground, very specific location of a project. And Mark, what I heard you talk about, at least in part, was engaging a network, a mappers network, that was already put together by another organization, tapping into it, becoming part of it, and really becoming a leader in that. So it's interesting to see that, that networks don't always have to be built yourself. You can really tap into them from other organizations as well. So Eric, why don't you respond to this as well?
It's great to have Mark on the line because what I'm about to talk about dovetails in perfectly. So, you know, when you ask what do engaged networks look like, I think the easy answer is messy. There's a lot that happens behind the scene. There's a lot of people talking to each other, trying to work with each other, and organizations that are the cultures might not fit perfectly. But there's a great quote by Harry Truman, which is, it's amazing what you can accomplish if you don't care who gets the credit. And I think, you know, having a veteran organization like Internews with us in Haiti was kind of case in point for that for us. It was them helping us to understand the reality of the disaster and emergency response on the ground, connecting us with other organizations, us working with other organizations outside of them as well, and putting together a platform, really, that hadn't been done before, which would allow ordinary Haitians to send in information, and then we would route that information to the right organization. So behind the scenes, behind the simple map that most people saw, behind the radio ads put out by Internews, was actually a kind of a convoluted and messy system. But by each organization being willing to work with each other and understand that the greater good came from helping each other rather than working against each other, we were able to get something out there. So I think that's one of the big lessons learned for us. And this was 2.5 years ago now. And the real lesson that Ushahidi as an organization took away from that was that we needed to make sure that we stayed small, we stayed fast, but we also stayed connected to other organizations, because by ourselves, we couldn't do nearly as much as the whole group combined could do. And, you know, that has been kind of permeated the rest of our deployments and the rest of the activities we do around community as well. And it showed us that most of the time, the individuals and the organizations who make up our greater community do much more than we alone as Ushahidi do. We just create the platform. And it's they who actually make that platform work and have true impact on the ground.
Great, and I love that answer of what do networks really look like in action? Well, they look messy. And I think from our experience, that's absolutely true. It's one of those approaches that you take to building capacity in your organization that requires a lot of work, a lot of nurturing, and as Eric said, and certainly was present in both Mary and Mark's answers as well, it takes a lot of connection, takes a lot of nurturing of real relationships.